another program of Savoir Faire. My name is Madani Faruja, and I will be your hostess during these programs, which are being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scampri Bonacci, who is also the artistic director of the Mdina Contemporary Art Biennale 2015. The series will be focusing on exploring design and designers. The topics will be extremely varied, from luxurious objects and famous designers to everyday objects. Today we will continue to discuss various iconic objects. Later on in the programs, I will be introducing you to various topics with the help of experts in the particular sectors. What is different about this program is that you can also view images of the objects that we will be discussing during the program by accessing a website built specifically for this program. The website is as follows: www.melfaruja.wix.com/savoirfaire. I will repeat it for you: www.melfaruja.wix.com/savoirfaire. Wix.com is spelled wix.com and Savoir Faire SavoirFaire. This can be accessed through your mobile phone as well. All you have to do is go to the Programs tab and click on the program number accordingly. So, welcome to program number 2, which you can follow under the Programs tab, as mentioned before. Today we'll be discussing more iconic objects from our everyday lives, along with objects of luxury. We will be discussing a number of chairs, which deserve to be mentioned in the long history of design. And we will also mention lamps, furniture, and light fixtures. I would like to start with a chair, which I'm sure all of you have seen, or even probably own one or two of these chairs. It's called the Bentwood chair. These wooden chairs consist of the backside and the hind legs in one piece, the wooden seat, and the front legs. The back is usually bare and embellished with either an S-shaped curved wooden design or even more plainer wooden inserts. We will be talking specifically on the design called number 14. So, the Bentwood chair was created in 1858 by Michael Tonnet, and it is thought of as the first mass-produced chair. And you can follow this from, if you're following us from the website, it is image number 1. Tonnet had managed to find a way to be able to bend solid and laminated beechwood, which made it possible to have a chair which is lightweight and to have it manufactured in large quantities. In fact, by 1930, 50 million had been sold from this number 14 chair model. Interesting to note is that these chairs were delivered in pieces and assembled on site as well. So, let's move on to another chair, which was definitely not created for mass production. I am referring to the Hill House leather chair, created by Charles Rennie Mackintosh in 1903. I will be reading an abstract from the book What Makes a Great Design by Susie Hodge. At a time when popular tastes favored the curving lines of Art Nouveau, Charles Rennie Mackintosh created this distinctly rectilinear chair, demonstrating his modernist inclinations. Named after Hill House in Helensburgh, Scotland, which he designed for publisher Walter Blackie and his family, the chair was one of two, made specifically for the main bedroom. These straight lines echo linear Japanese ideals of beauty that Mackintosh admired. But although every aspect appears straight, the back rungs curve slightly for comfort. The timber frame was ebonized to resemble lacquered wood used in Japanese furniture. Designed to enhance the white walls of the Hill House bedroom, Mackintosh's elegant leather back chair contrasted with the spatial proportions of the room, while its darkened wood dramatically offset the white closets on either side. Following Mackintosh's belief that design comes before function, the rigid, masculine form of the chair also counterbalanced the surrounding, essentially space. The confidently poised chair is characterized by an economy of line, while the grid pattern at the top is echoed elsewhere in the same room. I would like to conclude about these chairs by mentioning a quote which I find really a nice quote from this same designer, who said, "Life is the leaves which shape and nourish a plant, but art is the flower which embodies its meaning." So after this nice thought, let's move to another chair. And this time, well, it's something much more comfortable. In 1956, Charles and his wife Ray Eames designed the Eames lounge chair and ottoman. For those following on the website, we're now talking about image number 3. What is special about this chair? Well, this chair is aimed to provide comfort. Charles Eames described his creation by saying that he aimed to make a chair, and I'm quoting, "with the warm, receptive look of a well-used first baseman's mitt." The chair is formed by 3 plywood shells, 2 forming the back and 1 forming the seat, and another shell is used for the ottoman. Charles and Ray Eames were pioneers in producing an undulating chair of this kind through their experiments in using interlocking pieces of molded plywood in furniture. The chair, with its generous proportions and leather cushions, accommodates every sitter very, very comfortably. I would like to include a comment that I found. It was on the New York Times by Roberta Smith. She said about this chair that sometimes a chair is just a chair, but sometimes it is more. A luxury item, a symbol of authority, a refuge for mind and body, a design landmark. The Eames lounge chair, the spacious black leather and molded rosewood chair with ottoman that the designers Charles Eames and his wife Ray unveiled on national television in 1956, is all of the above. From all this leather comfort, we move to a plastic chair. A very fun and bright S-shaped chair, called in fact S-chair, by Werner Panton in 1959. For those of you following the website, now we're at image number 4. Werner Panton said that his work's goal is to move people to use their imagination and make their environment a bit more exciting. And I think surely managed to achieve this S-chair. The chair is made from one piece of injected molded plastic. It has no legs, and as the name suggests, it is in a form of a letter S, and comes in extremely bright colors. Seems this chair was inspired by a stack of buckets, and as almost all the designs that we are discussing, the chair was the product of extensive research and experiments which Panton did in collaboration with Dane Arne Jacobsen. Our next chair guest was described by one of its creators, who is Le Corbusier, as the true resting machine. I am referring to the LC4 chaise longue designed in 1928 by Le Corbusier, Pierre Jeanneret, and Charlotte Perriand. The chair was inspired by 18th century daybeds, but amalgamating the machine age aesthetics as per Le Corbusier's ideas. The chair is made of leather and a stainless steel structure, left exposed on purpose. Once the sitter reclines on it, the knees and feet are held at a higher position than the head. This is an extremely comfortable position, actually, for the sitter, and Le Corbusier was influenced by thoughts of a cowboy in the Wild West, smoking a pipe, feet in the air, higher than his head. Complete rest. So, away from the stainless steel chair lounge of Le Corbusier, we move to a very different chair, designed in 1969 by Joe Colombo. Image number 6 on the website. The chair is made from 4 cylindrical structures of different sizes, covered in foam. and situated in a horizontal position. And the chair is assembled by just 6 clips, which hold the cylinders together. The cylinders can be placed wherever needed and can also be inserted into one another for facility of transportation. The chair is really like anything designed before, though it never made it to production. One last chair for today, or a lounge rather than a chair. This was designed in 1986 by Mark Newson, who, I quote, said, "I think it is really important to design things with a kind of personality." I am referring to the Lockheed lounge here with its fluid metallic form, like a giant block of mercury, or personally reminds me of a seal. For those following us on the website, I am referring to image number 7 now. I will be reading an abstract from the website of the Vitra Design Museum about this lounge. The Lockheed lounge harks back to an initial version entitled LC1, which Mark Newson created for the Seating for Six exhibition at the Roslyn Oxley Gallery in Sydney. He drew inspiration for the shape of the piece from the Recamier seating type, whose name is derived from the chaise longue in the portrait of Juliette Recamier by Jacques-Louis David from the year 1800. For those following the images on the website, please refer to image number 8. Contrary to Newson's apprehensions, the success of LC1 was overwhelming, which prompted him to continue working on the piece. From 1986 to 1988, he reshaped the LC1 into a smoother and more flowing form, called the Lockheed Lounge, after the American aircraft manufacturer. Its body is primarily made of fiberglass, reinforced plastic. The legs smoothly descend from the natural curves and are covered with rubber, a stylistic principle to be found in many of Newson's works. The entire surface is covered with thin-walled aluminium sheets attached with blind rivets. These sheets do not overlap, but are joined together almost seamlessly, giving the impression of an airplane fuselage. The Lockheed Lounge caused a sensation in 2009, when it was sold at auction by Philips de Puri in London for £1.1 million, making it by far the most expensive contemporary design object. The piece that was auctioned became famous when Madonna was filmed reclining on it in the music video for her single Rain. For those who just joined us, I would like to remind you that you can follow images of what we're talking about by accessing the following website, www.melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. Then go to the Programs tab and select Program 2. Maybe we mentioned too many chairs for today, so let's move on to other household items. Let's mention some light fixtures, and of course, perhaps the most iconic of lamps are the Tiffany lamps. Image number 9, for those who are following us on the website, shows one of the many Tiffany designs. This particular design is called Oriental Poppy, which was created by Clara Driscoll for Tiffany. She worked for Tiffany for over 20 years. The Tiffany lampshades are immediately noticeable due to their extremely bright and colorful glass shades. How did it all start, though? Tiffany Glass Company was established in New York in 1885 by Louis Comfort Tiffany. They produced various glass items from glassware, jewelry, and stained glass. But the lampshades became what we can now call a classic. They were influenced by Art Nouveau and featured organic decorations, like different kinds of flowers, dragonflies, and butterflies. The glass designs for these shades, made of petals and leaves, are traced onto glass around templates, then cut out individually one by one and welded together with strips of copper. Tiffany managed to produce his own opalescent glass in various colors, The effect was of a unique sheen and beauty, and contrasted with the then contemporary technique of painting on colorless glass. Each lampshade is handmade, and in fact, from 1894, the Tiffany lamps were termed Favrille, which in old French means handmade. Another type of lamp, which I had no idea it was designed quite some decades ago, is the Arco lamp. If you visited any light fixture store recently, you would have surely noticed these dramatic and quite huge lamps, usually in stainless steel and in a form of a big arch. For those following on the website, this is image number 10. The typology of this lamp was designed way back in 1962 by two Italian brothers, both architects, called Achille and Pier Giacomo Castiglioni. The idea for such a lamp, which, thanks to its arc shape, it provides light far from where the lamp is actually standing. The idea came up when the two brothers were trying to provide lighting over dining tables without drilling holes in walls or ceiling. The influence from this idea came from the street lights, and once one gets to know this well, kind of seems pretty obvious that they resemble the street lights. But, as we say in Maltese, wara kul ħattaref. The brothers Castiglioni used Carrara marble as a base for their iconic lamp, which highly contrasted with the steel arc and aluminium shade. However, in today's reinterpretations of this lamp, usually the base is the same material as the rest of the lamp. Moving on to something more decorative, let's mention a couple of examples of vases. Let's start with the Wedgwood designs. It all started with Josiah Wedgwood in collaboration with John Flaxman Jr. in the late 18th century. An example of a vase by Wedgwood can be seen in image number 11. The Wedgwood designs can be immediately recognized due to their Greek, Roman and classical decorative representations in bas-relief, and also by the shape of the vase itself, which is also reminiscent of the classical. This was the time of the Neoclassicism, which is fully fledged on these vases. The influences from ancient discoveries all over Europe, and the demand for such subjects after people did their grand tours around Europe, made these kind of vases very popular. Wedgwood developed what he termed jasperware, a type of fine mud pottery, which he named after an ancient mineral, to make antique pots and vases. Together with John Flaxman, who was a neoclassical sculptor and designer, they produced these fine vases. Interesting to note is that since the late 18th century, Wedgwood was already having a vision of a museum for his artifacts. In fact, as early as 1774, he already showed that he wished he had preserved samples of all the company's works, and he began to exactly do this. The first formal museum was opened in May 1906 with a curator named Isaac Cook. Today, the Wedgwood Museum is found in Barlaston in UK. And for those who wish to have more information, this is the museum's website, www.wedgwoodmuseum.org.uk. Wedgwood is a company that still exists today as well. Let's move on to a totally different kind of vase, which looks so contemporary. We will be discussing the Finnish designer Alvar Aalto and his Savoy vase. I'd like to start by introducing the designer with a quote, where he said, "We should work for simple, good, undecorated things, but things which are in harmony with the human being and organically suited to the little man in the street." The Savoy vase was created in 1936 in collaboration with his wife, Aino Marcio, also a designer herself. It is really not easy to describe this vase to you. For those following us on the website, this is image number 12. So, this vase is made up of glass, it's asymmetrical, its upright shape forms a series of individually sized undulations. One way of describing it is like a flowing drapery, I would say, And in fact, it is said that this vase was inspired by Aalto's drawing of a dress of a Sami woman. Others say that the shape of the vase reminds of the Finnish landscapes. The iconic wavy and undulating outline was achieved by blowing glass into an arrangement of wooden sticks stuck into the ground and letting the molten glass swell on some of the sides but not on others. Another creation by the same Alvar Aalto is the L-legged stacking stool, created in the early 1930s. This stool became the mostly sold item of all Aalto's furniture. Image number 13. This model of stool, which is very easy to stack on top of each other, hence the name, is made up of wood and it is made up of a very plain round base, which is the seat, and three L-shaped legs. He managed to invent methods of molding ply which resulted in managing to bend plywood. This provided the opportunity to attach the legs to the base of the stool without any further support. Currently, there is an exhibition at the Vitra Design Museum in Germany called Alvar Aalto Second Nature. This exhibition is ongoing till the 1st March 2015. And also, there is an Alvar Aalto Museum in Finland. For those who wish to access the website, you can find this information about this museum at www.alvaraalto.fi. A-L-V-A-R-A-A-L-T-O. We are approaching the end of today's program, but before we conclude, I would like to mention two pieces of furniture worthy of being mentioned. They're both from the same period, but quite different in their decorative design. I will start with the corner cupboard. I am sure many of you have a corner-shaped cupboard, that is a cupboard which fits nicely in a corner. Well, the idea for using the space in corners originated in the late 1760s, when Thomas Chippendale designed such a cupboard for his friend David Garrick. And here I'm referring to image number 14 for those following us on the website. He designed what is known as a chinoiserie cabinet. What do we mean by chinoiserie? As one might detect from the name, it is an artistic style which reflects Chinese artistic influences. It is characterized by the use of a fanciful imagery of an imaginary China. It was quite still popular during this period. So this cupboard's decorative images show almost silhouette images of oriental buildings and vegetations, all in block color, very similar as used in the Japanese prints, which hopefully we will be discussing in another program dedicated to Japanese prints. The design on this cupboard also resembles the Chinese wallpaper, which was very common in Europe at the time. This type of cupboard was literally known as encanier, which means the angle where the two walls meet, so the corner. It is made up of a top, three sides, one of them being the front panel, which is also a door, and three legs. A curiosity about Thomas Chippendale is that in 1754 he was the first cabinet maker to publish a book of his designs. The book also offered advice on color, textiles, and soft furnishings. The name of the book was The Gentleman and Cabinet Maker's Director. Chippendale was mainly influenced by the chinoiserie style we already mentioned and the Rococo style. In this cabinet we mentioned, he manages to capture the fanciful oriental forms with the lightness and harmony of Rococo. The last design we will be discussing today is a console table. Even though this piece of furniture comes from the same period as the one we just mentioned, however, aesthetically it's very rich, and the style here is a flamboyant Rococo, though it also incorporates Japanese techniques in its finish. This is image number 15. Let's start by getting to know the designer. Who was Bernard von Riesenberg II? He was born in a family of furniture makers, and in 1730 he joined the Guild of Furniture Makers. And as we mentioned, he works mostly in the Rococo style. His patrons included the King Louis XV and his mistress Madame de Pompadour, and other members of the aristocracy. And his furniture designs made sure to celebrate and reflect the grandeur of these VIPs. The ornate console table that we can see in the picture number 15 shows an oriental scene in the middle. Though the execution, I think it's very different than Chippendale's, and the scene is enclosed by a very flamboyant Rococo gilded cornice. The curvilinear legs of the table are also carved and gilded at the bottom, and the top of the table is in marble. In contrast with the contemporary furniture, which was usually just painted on, von Riesenberg enhanced his designs with inlaid porcelain, marquetry and gilding. And he always signed his works by stamping his initials B.V.R.B. I will stop here for today, and thank you for joining us. Next week, the program will focus on miscellaneous iconic objects and their designers. Amongst others, I will mention luxurious handbags, stylish coffee machines, sunglasses, watches, the London Underground map, and Coca-Cola bottles. The following programs eventually will be more focused on particular subjects, where with the help of guests we will be able to discover more in detail the subject which we will be discussing. May I remind you that these programs are available on the Campus FM website, which is MaltaUniversityBroadcasting.com, and you will be able to find all the past programs from this website. And this program was brought to you by the History of Art Department under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, the Artistic Director of the Mbina Biennale 2015. And also, for more info about the Biennale, you can visit www.mbinabiennale.org. See you next week.